Welcome to another episode of What the Fook, where we talk old school pitching and baseball with Steve Foucault, former closer for the Texas Rangers and Detroit Tigers, and a longtime pitching coach in minor league and independent baseball. In our first episode, we talked with Steve about his playing career. Today, we talk about life after baseball, how he got back into the game, the difference for pitchers between affiliated and independent ball, and when Steve knew it was time to leave the game for good. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing wonderful, Jim.
And I forgot to mention also, Steve is, of course, the most interesting retired pitching coach in the world. That's part of what we want to talk about today is, the first episode we talked about your career as a pitcher, but, you know, all things do come to an end. And after you got released by Kansas City and you tried it once more with Seattle and Houston, your pitching career as a player just kind of came to a close.
Yeah, it did come to a close. I did have some shoulder ailments, and it really kept me from being the pitcher that I was. So I just shut her down.
I remember you have told me before that you could get loose. It just took longer, but I've heard it said hitters will tell you when things aren't going right. Did the hitters let you know that you'd lost movement or velocity or both, or could you tell?
Well, I don't think that was the case. It was just that, you know, it was not going well, and nobody really wanted to see it. They went to younger players, and things like that happened back then.
So you go home, you're out of the game, and you end up going into police work after that. What inspired that move?
Yeah, there was no, you know, defining moment, I guess you would say. My ex-wife at the time had met some lieutenant, and he lived in our neighborhood, and she was listening to the police scanner radio, and I really didn't have anything to fall back on at that time, and didn't have any big business people after my wares. So I decided, you know what, I'm gonna go to the police and apply there, take it from there, and it ended up that I got accepted and I did go into police work for a time. I was a policeman for the city of Arlington, Texas, and I was there for approximately 5 years as a street cop.
Okay. And lived to tell the tale in the mean streets of Arlington?
Yeah, well, back then, Arlington, it wasn't what it is at this stage of the game. There was probably less than 100,000 people in Arlington at that time, and much more calm, and now it's a bustling metropolis.
Yeah, a real part of the Metroplex now. But eventually, you worked your way back to baseball, first with part ownership in a batting range, is that right?
Yeah, a friend of mine, Larry Hardy, me and Larry had met in Dominican. We pitched on the same team, and we became friends. He was living in Arlington at the time, and he was a pitcher for the Padres, and he ended up being with the Astros and got a few years in the big leagues. And we would do odds and ends together, do sprinkler systems, and we would maintain people's lawns, more landscaping than mowing, just landscaping type stuff.
Yeah.
And he decided he wanted to open up a batting range, and asked me if I wanted to be his partner. I said, yeah, sure, why not? It's a good way to get back in the game. And so I did that for a couple of years and actually ended up getting a job as a pitching coach with the Milwaukee Brewers, the minor leagues, thanks to Larry's acquaintance with the guy in the Brewers minor league system.
So that's how you made the connection, was through Larry Hardy?
Yeah, and his friend was actually Bob Humphreys. I'm not sure if Bob still works or not. Bob's a little bit older than we are.
Okay. Was it basically your career in the big leagues that gave you the cred for somebody to say, okay, look, you don't have experience, but we'll try you out in the low minors and go from there?
I kind of think so. When I got to the Brewers, we had like 2 weeks of meetings before the spring training actually opened up. And the Brewers were under a change of philosophies and personnel, and they had hired a whole bunch of new people. Sal Bando had taken over as the GM. And according to Sal, in one of our meetings, he goes, you know what, fellas, I'm looking around here, and he goes, all my pitching coaches are here because I don't know if I ever got a hit off any of you guys.
Well, I guess that's a pretty good endorsement. There's nothing like personal experience.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
was it just that you wanted to get back in the game, or did you, in the back of your mind, even when you were pitching in the big leagues, think about pitching coach jobs?
I really didn't, because back when I played, there wasn't a whole lot of technology involved, and there wasn't a lot of coaches that were really into mechanical things. They just kind of guided you along and helped you out the best you could. So even when I got into coaching, having the batting range and watching Larry teach lessons at our batting range helped me out a lot when I first got started into the coaching aspect. And I owe a lot to Larry for that, because it really gave me a good foundation for teaching, even though we were teaching pretty much kids from like 10 to 15.
Sure, fundamentals, mechanics are pretty similar, I would think, regardless. When you got on with the Brewers, did you start in the fall league, or where did they place you to start with?
No, actually, when I first signed with the Brewers, I was assigned to the rookie league.
Okay.
And something happened, and I was going to make, like, I don't know, $12,000 for 3 months or something just mind-boggling. So in the month before spring training, after I signed my contract, somebody had gotten released or something happened, and they moved a couple of guys up. So before my first day in spring training, I got moved up to the low class A league and got a $15,000 raise, which is more than I made as a player my first several years.
Wow. So did that hook you up with one Wayne Krenchicki and Beloit at that point?
It did. In 1992, we were paired together in spring training as the manager and pitching coach in Beloit, Wisconsin, and we didn't have a hitting coach that first year we were there. It was just Wayne and I.
When you start with a new manager as the pitching coach, how do you develop a working relationship? I mean, obviously, you and Chick were together for quite a few years, but how do you figure out who does what? How do you build trust in each other and that working arrangement? How does that come about?
Well, it's a process. And Chick and I did have a little bit in common. He was going to school at the University of Miami down in Florida, and I grew up in Miami, so I was fortunate enough to meet Chick, and that, I believe, was 1975, I believe, because I would go to down to Miami, even though I was living in Texas. I'd go down there for a couple of 4 to 6 weeks to get ready for spring training, and I'd throw batting practice at my high school in Miami-Dade South and the University of Miami, and I got to meet Wayne at that point, and you know, and that helped us a lot get along.
I've read where he basically said, look, we're two different kinds of personalities, but we have complete trust in one another. Did that happen pretty quickly for you guys because of your previous connection?
Well, it kind of really did, because when there's only two of you, there's not a whole lot of other people to argue with, so you kind of you establish relationship really quickly. You don't always agree, but he's a manager, and he makes the final decision on pretty much everything that you do at that time.
You mentioned that the Brewers had a new regime. Where did they sit at that time? Because I know it became an issue later about winning as opposed to player development. Where did they sit with that? Or were you told anything?
Well, we were told after 3 years that we were out of there, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's why I say I know it didn't end up working out, but theoretically,
Go ahead. No,
I was going to say, theoretically, were you supposed to be developing players, or were you supposed to be winning games, or were you trying to do both?
We were supposed to be developing players, which is what the minor leagues was supposedly all about. And if you happen to win in the meantime, that's just a bonus, because there is something to be said about being a loser and learning how to lose. And if you don't know how to win, it's very difficult to get that feeling of winning. But you know, Chick and I were pretty successful in Beloit for two of the 3 years that we were there. We played for league championship 1 year and was in the playoffs another year. 1 year we had a bunch of good players that didn't like each other, and unfortunately we had a bad year, and that was the second year in Beloit.
And did they ever specifically say when they let you go that they felt like you didn't win enough or you didn't develop players enough? Did they give you any reason? Because I ask because I've talked to other people who were working for the Brewers at that time, and they were not the happiest of campers either, because they felt like they didn't get enough direction and then still got the rug pulled out from under them.
There was not a reason given. It's the old typical, Fookie, we're going a different direction at this point in time, and unfortunately you were in Krinchicki are two people that we're not bringing back next year. Have a nice day.
And I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
So 3 years of that, and then you get hooked up in independent ball with the Atlantic League, right?
No, actually, right after the Brewers, Krinchicki went to a league in Texas, and I can't remember what it was called. But in the meantime, I'd gotten hooked up with the Texas Rangers, who obviously I pitched for in the big leagues for 4 years, 4 years in the minor leagues. And Green Nichols was a new farm director for Texas, and he was hiring a bunch of new people, too, and I was selected to be the new pitching coach in the Rangers organization. And it's kind of funny, I lasted 3 years or two, and they started going a different direction, and I was never told why they were letting me go again. And then, you know, so that's pretty much the way things went at that point in time.
How did that lead to getting back with Krinchicki and going to the Atlantic League after that?
The Atlantic League was starting up in 1998, and some guy that Chick knew from someplace, I believe he knew him, or this guy knew of Krinchicki, they had a New Jersey connection, and he was going to be the GM in Camden, New Jersey. Or not Camden, Lehigh Valley Black Diamonds. This guy was from someplace up in upper state New Jersey or southern Pennsylvania or someplace. And he had interviewed Chick and decided to hire Chick, and Chick asked if he would consider hiring me as a pitching coach because we got along so well and became pretty good friends while we were with the Brewers. So I was living in Florida at the time, and I actually interviewed with this guy in Port St. Lucie, Florida, and he liked me a lot, and we got along well, so and he did hire me as the pitching coach. And then we started the Atlantic League, the first year of the Atlantic League in 1998.
And as I understand, the Black Diamonds, who later became the Road Warriors because they didn't end up with a home stadium, you guys had quite the experience there one season with camping out for the entire year, basically?
Yeah, there was probably about half of the team that camped out. The other guys that were not working the land, they didn't like camping out and cooking out and all that stuff. They stayed in a motel around the Quakertown area. We all lived there. There was probably 15 of us. Including my wife and my stepdaughter was actually our trainer. She was a qualified trainer, and she'd gone to school in South Florida, got her degree, and called Joe Klein, who was basically the general manager of the whole league and the president, and he signed off on us. So she was our trainer, and we bought three tents, and we all lived in a tent. About 10 players had tents, and we would go to the store and buy meat and cook out. Hell, they had a whole bunch of lakes at this campgrounds place. It was huge. We'd have fishing tournaments on days off and stuff. We had a ball.
Wow. I'm sure that probably wasn't what those guys were thinking was going to happen when they signed up. Certainly one for the memory books anyway.
Oh, that is for sure.
But Lehigh Valley had, what, all kinds of financial problems and no home field and a full road schedule. So there was, what, two seasons of that for you guys?
The first year, actually, we played in, I can't, trying to think of the name of the town. I can't even think of the name. Newburgh, New York. We played in the stadium downtown in Newburgh. It's kind of funny that the stadium, Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig or somebody had actually played in. It was built in like 1918 or so. It actually had one of the light towers was actually in the field to play in left center.
That's independent ball for you.
Well, I'm telling you.
but you guys ended up staying in the Atlantic League and went to Camden after that? Was that the next stop?
We did. We spent 3 years at Lehigh Valley Black Diamond. It's kind of funny. The owner ran into financial issues, but the stadium that he was wanting to build got to be about half built, and we would go by there, it's right off Interstate 80 in the eastern area. And you could see it from the Interstate 80. It was on the side of the hill. They actually had the light towers up. They didn't have lights on at that time. But the whole shell of the ballpark was already built. They had places for the seats, and the field was actually cleared out. It was crazy. Yeah, but then we went to Camden, New Jersey. Yes, it was the first year of Camden, and the year 2001 was the first year in Camden, yeah.
And was that with John Brandt as the GM?
John Brandt was the GM, and Steve Schilling was our owner. Steve had a lot of money, and he owned, oh, I don't know, they said he owned like 100 different companies, which he may have, I don't know, I'm not going to tell anybody that he didn't, but he had bukus of money, and then his wife was involved with our club too, not hands-on, but she went to a lot of games and would sit in her box, and she loved the Camden River Sharks. And unfortunately, Steve got sick and got cancer, and I guess he'd had cancer numerous times before and ended up dying, I think, in 2004. And part of his will or estate or whatever stated that he could not, or his wife could not keep a entity that was a losing proposition. So we are one of those.
We talked about in affiliated ball, there's that conflict between developing players and winning. Now you're in the Atlantic League, that's basically a second chance league for a lot of these players who were either overlooked or released. As a pitching coach, you've got a lot of damaged goods guys to look over and to try to work with, but their goal is to make it back and into affiliated ball and go from there. How do you have to deal with that differently as a pitching coach compared to affiliated ball when you're working with these guys?
Yeah, it was a lot different. Yet you pretty much had to have a meeting before even spring training started, or the first day, and you really had to take notes and find out what these guys have been through and why they were there. A lot of the guys we got were from injuries that they were trying to get back. And most of in our league, even at that time, the first several years of our league, almost all these players that we had gotten were at least double A to triple A and ex-major league players. There was a very few players in our league that if you did not play at least the double A level, they could not compete in that league. And now it's even a lot of double A guys struggle in that league.
Did you run into any cases where the player was more interested in what was good for him personally as opposed to, well, we really are still trying to win these games?
Not so much, really. Most of these guys were, I guess you would say they're happy to be there, but then they're not happy to be there. They're happy for the opportunity that they're getting, but they're unhappy that somebody else had really stuck it to them or did something bad to them, which is always the case.
And from Camden, you guys moved on again, but stayed in the Atlantic League with Newark, right?
We did. Tom Brandon got fired from the River Sharks from Camden when some new owners had taken over and bought the team from the Schilling family, and they decided they were going to fire John Brandt. He went to Newark, and he was there for 1 year, and Chick and I were still in Camden, so as soon as these people came in and really took over the thing, they fired me and Chick, then John was more than happy to bring us up to Camden because we had really done a good job for him. In Camden, the first year that we were in Newark, we won the league championship, which made John real happy.
And that was the first championship for you guys working together, right?
It was, yeah. We had been to the championship series once in Camden, and obviously Lehigh Valley was a difficult situation. You're playing the road every day. But we were very competitive, and we always had a winning record, even in Lehigh Valley.
Even though you guys won a championship, wasn't there another change of ownership in Newark where they brought in Tim Raines and some other people, and you guys were sort of forced out there?
Yeah, there was. We were in Newark for 2 years. The second year, we had a really, really good team. We got beat in the finals. I can't remember if Sparky Lyle's team in Somerset, New Jersey beat us, I think, but I'm not positive. And then the new owners took over Newark, and he fired John Brandt, and they fired everybody.
Wow.
And Tim Raines did come in there, yes. And that was pretty much the end of Krinchicki's managerial career. He decided to shut her down.
Well, you forgot about that memorable season and a half in Evansville now with the Evansville Otters. Now, come on, we can't shortchange that. How could you forget that?
I can't. You're right. I got to push Chick out the door a little quicker than he did.
Well,
than he needed to be.
But yeah, a season and a half with Evansville, and you guys got let go right around just after July 4th, as I recall, the second year.
Yeah, it was like July 4th, I think. And we were actually, Chick and I were living at the owner's house on the Ohio River in Evansville, and we had, it was a gorgeous house, as you recall, because
yes,
you were there for at least a week. And I think it was July 5th, maybe. And Chick said, "Hey, you staying over?" I in a few days. I said, "Chick, I'll be out here within an hour." So I packed my truck and I was gone.
And that really was the end of managing for him. I guess he just basically had enough.
Yeah, he was tired of it, and I guess, you know, through his investments and what he had saved, you know, he had enough money and baseball retirement stuff like that. So he bought a ranch and shut it down.
But you didn't. You stayed with it and ended up having a pretty good run in Long Island with the Ducks up there. Tell me about getting hooked up in Long Island.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to still coach because I was not at a retirement age, and you know, I knew I could still coach and I could still throw bat practice every day. But I called Joe Klein to take his temperature on what was going on in the Atlantic League and who was, if there was any jobs available. And he goes, "You know what?" He goes, "There's a job open in Long Island." He goes, "Let me call the GM and talk to him and see where he's at. There could be a possibility there." So like a couple of days later, the general manager in Long Island called me. He goes, "You know what?" He goes, "You're the perfect person we're looking for. We just hired a new manager who's never managed before. He's been in the league a long time as a player and a coach for us." And he said he could use a lot. He could use some help with his pitching staff. And a person like you would be ideal for what we're trying to do here. I said, "Okay." You know, so I ended up going up to Long Island. And Kevin Baez was the manager, a great young guy, a good family man, and we got along good. And I told him, you know, he goes, "You got the pitch staff. You do everything you need to do, because I'll take care of the players, and we'll have a hitting coach and all that stuff." I said, "All right, Kevin." I said, "I got you." But I said, "After the first half of the season is over, we go to the second half." I said, "You're doing all the pitch changes, and you're doing everything. You need to learn how to do it." I said, "I'll help you out the first half and tell you why I'm doing this and why I'm doing that. And then you're going to do it the second half, because you got to learn how to do it sooner or later." And he goes, "You got a deal." I said, "Okay." So that's how we worked out the deal in Long Island. I was there for 4 years, and we won two league championships and it was in the finals another year. And the fourth year we were competitive, but then we didn't make the playoffs.
So you were actually, you really were there as much to mentor the manager as you were to mentor the pitchers.
Yes, initially, yes, that was the case, yes. But, you know, after the first, you know, 3 months of the season or two and a half, halfway through the season, you know, he's still learning, obviously. And if he thought he had made a mistake, he goes, "What would you have done?" and all this stuff. And I would tell him, and he really learned, and, you know, and he did a good job the whole 4 years I was there.
Much more success in Long Island than other spots in the Atlantic League, yet there is sort of a salary cap and stuff in that league, and you do have other constraints. How does an organization like Long Island consistently get better talent or better coaching or that mix? How does that continue to work in a league with limitations like that?
You know, they always got the best players for the most part for an entire team. I mean, other teams had as good of players, but not throughout the whole roster. It seemed like, you know, we always had a really, really good players. Of course, we would lose them through the season because the organizations would come and take them away from you. So we always had to replace a lot more players than other teams did. A lot of times they would only lose, you know, maybe three or four players throughout the season. And sometimes in Long Island, we'd lose three or four within a week. And it's tough to replace those guys really quickly like that.
Yeah, you've got to have somebody that has to have a pretty good network that they can be able to get hold of people on short notice and not have a big drop-off.
Yeah, you have to have good connections to the GM, and obviously the GM in Long Island had that.
And, you know, like you say, multiple championships there, but did that reach a point where you just felt like you'd done enough, or you were ready to stop traveling, or what led you to get out?
Yeah, I was 65 years old after the fourth season, you know, and then that in the bus seat next to the manager got real hard as years went on, and I just decided, you know, I'm ready to slow down here a little bit and just go home to Florida and relax and enjoy life and take it easy and not have to worry about all the traveling and the bus driving and being away from my wife and my two little dogs. So I decided to shut it down.
Any regrets about doing that? I mean, did you get feelers from people about coming back and doing other jobs after that?
I'm sure I could have got another job if I wanted to, because I, you know, people in the Atlantic League were changing coaches all the time. A lot of the coaches would get jobs and organizations, and I really didn't have any desire to do it that time. I'd had enough. I'd taste my mouth wasn't very good with a lot of that, and I didn't want to have to go through that again. It wasn't fun, and it's psychologically it's not very good, because they can beat you down pretty good if they want to.
So sounds like you don't have any regrets about shutting it down when you did.
Absolutely not. I'm very happy at this point.
And so you look back at your playing and coaching career pretty good for the most part. Any real regrets about the whole thing?
I'm pretty pleased with the way things went. Obviously, you'd like to play longer as a player. And sometimes physically, it's just not going to happen for you, and there's not much you can do about it. I think if I was a player at this day and age right now, you know, they're going to take you and they're going to get all kinds of operations, and you're going to get more time in the big leagues and this and that. But back then, that wasn't the case, man. They'd replace you in 2 seconds and didn't even think twice about it.
Yeah. In general, though, things are okay. You look back on baseball and say, yeah, that was okay. I got as much out of it as I could, and I got to go out on my own terms, at least as a coach.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I was pleased the way things went as a player and as a coach, actually. And I know I put as much into the game as that I got out of it, and I'm not sure everybody can say that.
That's it for this episode. Tune in next time as we continue to search for the answer to that age-old baseball question, what the fook?